I'm Josefina Bonsundinvumba. Welcome to Retential Conversations, the podcast. I truly believe in the untapped potential existing in Africa and within African communities inside and outside of Africa, whose talent, hard work, and innovations can help and are helping transform our societies. I also believe in the value of stories and that by sharing, we can identify common lessons, challenges, and opportunities for growth. This podcast is for those interested in African narratives and topics that touch African communities, with the hope of creating a safe platform for open conversation, learning, and inspiration. I hope you're as excited as me and that you enjoy listening. This episode is one of my favorite ones. It features Stephen Akintayo, Nigerian digital marketing consultant, philanthropist, and businessman. I met Stephen at the Commonwealth Africa Summit here in London, where I had the opportunity to exchange a bit with him during one of the breaks, and his story, work, energy, and passion really captivated me. I then had the opportunity to attend one of his workshops on how to build multiple streams of income, and after this amazing workshop, I was able to have a fascinating conversation with him. Stephen talks about the importance of leveraging technology and creating wealth, the latter, he describes, being the key to unlocking Africa's potential and tackle one of Africa's biggest challenges, unemployment. I hope you enjoy it. Well, hi, Stephen.
Yeah, hello.
First of all, thank you so much for the session today. It was amazing. It was so great to learn how to leverage technology, especially in this era, to make money, right? Yeah. And why that is important for financial freedom and how Africa can benefit from that. Mm-hmm. I'd like you to first introduce yourself, so who you are. I only discovered you very recently.
Yeah. Thank you.
Good?
Yeah.
Sorry.
That's all right. So I learned about you quite recently, and it looks like a lot of Nigerians already know who you are.
Yeah.
And you are an inspiration for many of them. Mm-hmm. So tell me, how do you get to do what you do? What do you do? What's your background?
Okay, I'm Stephen Akintayo. I'm the principal consultant, Stephen Akintayo Consulting. The CEO of GTES Global. We're a group of companies with interest in agriculture, real estate, digital marketing, technology, and so on and so forth. So we're kind of a group of companies. We're majorly based in Africa, but we have subsidiaries in the US, in the UK, and United Arab Emirates, and we're hoping to expand globally. But what I'm often known for is our charity project, where we work with orphans in providing scholarship, as well as, you know, our feeding projects where we go to the suburb to feed. Like the last one we did in January, we fed 1,000 kids in Ajegunle. We're at Kirikiri Prison. You know, fed 600 inmates, and annually we sponsor more than 100 kids to school. Yeah. The other part of that project is the financial empowerment that we do across Africa and of course the world. We do in the US, UK, Canada, where we run trainings for Africans on how to create multiple streams of income. So, you know, we are from a part of the world where we play the victim card, where everybody says, you know, we can't make a headway. And then you ask yourself, we're usually the most educated immigrants in the United Kingdom, in Europe, in the United States of America. So how come we often replicate our poverty, even internationally? Even though when we get there, we are one of the most educated in those parts of the world. Many of us in those parts of the world are doing very well professionally, but financially not so much, right? You ask yourself, what is the total, you know, investment contribution of Africans in diaspora, in whatever country they reside, in terms of how much do we own in real estate? in the US, in the UK. And usually it's because we are stuck with the industrial era mentality. And that mentality says, go to school, get a good degree, and work, right? Meanwhile, they don't teach you how to own your business in the university. They only teach you how to manage somebody else's business. And Africa is not suffering from lack of having business managers. We're suffering from not having enough businesses. The issue of unemployment. What creates unemployment? You don't have enough businesses to employ people. So what Africa needs are entrepreneurs, people who need to go start their businesses. Unfortunately, because we're schooled with the industrial era curriculum, so we only know how to manage established businesses, big businesses that no longer exist. So if I study microbiology in my first degree, right, to start a plant or to start a lab, or to start any of these kind of businesses require a lot of money, hundreds of thousands of dollars that usually I can't just find like that. So it's hard to have a small startup in many of the courses that we study.
Yeah.
And so hence the need for what I do, which is how then can you use technology to start a microbiology blog where you begin to educate people on issues around microorganisms, and stuff like that, and then monetize that blog and start making money. And maybe you make enough money to set up a lab, and then maybe one day you open a manufacturing plant and still use that, you know, skill. Or how do I start my YouTube channel? These are some of the businesses we teach, and make it run and make money from it. How do I go into affiliate marketing? How do I run a freelance business from my house? How do I start my e-commerce business? Maybe grow it to a point I am the Amazon in my own region. So,
yeah.
And these are businesses you can start with less than $1,000. And that's what Africa needs right now.
Yeah.
How we can begin to have, look at the German economy. More than 90% of the German economy is sustained by SMEs, right? Small businesses, you can take in 5 people to work for you, 10 people to work for you, and they are not doing badly. Neither Africa needs to replicate that. Okay, where you begin to have, you know, entrepreneurs here and there, 5 people working for your small media, online media business that you started with almost zero. I started my business with $10. And we've grown it to a multi-million dollar corporation today. So that is my passion right now. And I'm happy that we've trained over 100,000 people online and offline. And you have attended one of the training here in London.
It was amazing. Highly recommend it. Yes.
You know, and you can see the excitement in their faces. Like, where was I all this while? How come I've been in London for 20 years? I've not been able to start my business. I've just been working from paycheck to paycheck. So I'm happy at what we're doing.
So let me take it a step back. So you're saying that what you do now is your passion, but how do you discover that passion? What led you to where you are today? Can you tell me a bit about your personal background and how that relates to this of who you are today?
So I was born in Maiduguri, Borno State in Nigeria, as a northern part of the country. And, I grew up in one of the villages, really, even though it's close to the main city. And no electricity for over 5 years, no running water. Of course, no. I remember I first saw a water closet at the age of 13 or 14. It was a miracle.
Wow.
Right? Like, you could have a bathroom and a toilet in the house. And then you can click something and then, oh, you were me and my sibling then. I remember we used to go and then just go flush again. Just, you know, pressing the thing.
Just for fun.
Yeah, because it was magic. But I didn't see that until I was 13. And At the age of 17, I read my first business book called Rich Dad Poor Dad. I think that's where everything changed. But before that, I was sad, you know, seeing how my mom used to take us. Whenever we're going to school is the worst time, because usually my mom doesn't have enough money to pay the bills. So we have to go from neighbor to neighbor, you know, oh, your son is going to school. And, you know, they look at my mother like, we two have children. So why must you come to us like, you know, we should borrow you money. Usually it's borrow me, you know, borrow Gary. I went to a boarding house, so we borrow. I was just not happy, right? You know, there's that sadness. And a lot of people felt my mom was okay, because she was like at the middle level management staff, but she had 5 kids and she was the only one. Even though my dad was with us, but she was the breadwinner. My dad wasn't contributing anything. So people felt like, you know, she should have enough, but she really doesn't, because she had 5 kids to raise just on her own. So I was quite hungry. Why am I poor? Why are my parents poor? Why should people live like this? You know, sometimes, you know, I used to be angry, like, why must they have 5 kids? Well, I can't tell them, right? Because he was my dad was religious and very strong. Punishment was common. You offend my dad, you go on 3-day fasting or 7-day fasting.
Wow.
Or dry fasting for 3 days. So it was quite, I was fearful, couldn't tell them what I felt. But I had this cousin who was doing well, and at some point, after reading books on that, okay, rich dad, poor dad, a young guy, and the dad was poor, even though he had PhD. So that started opening me up to the fact that even though my mother was saying, I am in this state because I didn't have my first degree, and that if only I go to university and have a good degree, I was going to be rich because I'll get a good job. But reading that book at the age of 17 showed me that that's not realistic. That a guy called Robert Kiyosaki had a father who had a PhD, but was broke. And then he had his friend's dad who barely had first degree and was rich. So I started seeing that, look, it wasn't the formal education that's going to make you rich, but the informal education about financial literacy, about apprenticeship, learning, you know, from successful entrepreneurs and all that. And that really, for me, was the magic, I believe so. And by the time I finished secondary school, I started going for seminars and meetings. And the real shocker happened to me when one of my mentors in secondary school, I had just entered university. He had graduated from university. So I went to visit him. I saw him in one room apartment with about 5 of his siblings.
Wow.
Struggling, and he was brilliant. He had the best result, you know. So, you know, like a mentor that you are wondering whether you can, you know, get to a point where you can be as intelligent as he is. Meeting him, and I was like, what's going on? Why are you suffering? He said, I don't have a job. And you finished school for how many years? And you are in the city, Lagos. You know, we were in Kwara State then, and he moved to Lagos. So how can you be jobless in the city? And so that, again, opened me up to the fact that even if I finish school, I may not have a job. And so I remember, and I just entered school, I remember going to school, back to school. That's the university. And I said, you know, in the bus, I vowed that when I finish school, even if there's no job, I'm going to employ myself. And that was exactly what happened. By the time I finished school, 8 years for a 5-year course. Yeah, you know, strike and all that,
yeah.
Public school. Wrote 100 CVs, started taking in one place. That, trust me, the third place, the man looked at me and said, thank God, while on campus, I started doing business from trade fairs, selling popcorn, you know, all these kind of odd kind of businesses, but event planning, seminars, conferences. Many of them, I didn't make profit. I ran into losses and all that. But my mom was there to support me. Unfortunately, she died in my final year to ovarian cancer. So by the time I finished school, the dream of running a business was dead. because she was the hope, you know, of sponsoring me and all that. So I wrote 100 CV, took it to the first place. You know, they told me, I wrote a cover letter that don't pay me for 6 months. Okay, I know there's no job. I'm willing to work as an intern. Don't pay me for 6 months. If you like, if I do well, right, after 6 months, you can employ me full time and start paying me. First place, they said there's no seat.
Not even for free?
Yes, that's what they said to me, that we don't have seat for you. That you can see, there's no seat for you as an intern. Second place, nobody even said anything. Just took my CV and moved away. The third place, the man looked at me and said, I've read your CV. You've done a couple of businesses on campus. Why not pick one of them? I said, no capital, I don't have experience. The man said, I won't lie to you. There's no job in Nigeria.
You have to create it.
I said, create one. And you know, I still call that man my guardian angel. Because I abandoned distributing 100 CV after I had a long chat with that man. And I picked one of the businesses, which was bulk SMS. So how, you know, people sending messaging to their customers in bulk. So started going to 20 schools per day, pasting posters, doing all manner.
Did you have a mentor at that point, or were you, how did you venture into it? Why did you decide that
business?
I started
on campus.
Okay, so yourself, you just thought of the idea?
Yes, so I had some people on campus who gave me $7. So I had a couple of people on campus, they gave me about $7, it was a fellowship. So I added $3 to it. They wanted me to help them send messaging to their members to come for the conference they had. So I started that, but very low scale on campus with just $10. So it was the only business I could start without capital. You know, so all I then needed was massive marketing. So I used to do photocopy, like buy bulk SMS for 70 kobo, you know, and then paste it. I had this two-page proposal I take to school, 20 schools per day.
Wow.
You know, yeah, so many of them didn't even know what it was. So I had to do a lot of education. Many of them also had to tell me they didn't even have, you know, that they didn't even have the database of their pupils. So I had to say, okay, I'll go to with your teachers, we'll tell your pupils to bring the numbers of their parents. Once you have it, send it to me. So it was a lot. It was hard. It was hard. But I grew that business to almost 100,000, yeah, over 100,000 US dollars.
Oh, wow.
Business. At some point, we started doing over 500,000 US dollars annual transaction in the business. So, but it was a lot of hard work.
I can imagine.
It was.
So, for example, you mentioned and you talk a lot about, you know, creating money, having money and wealth.
Yeah.
Why is wealth important, especially for Africans and the African continent? Apart from the fact of having money, why is it important for Africans to create wealth?
I think because, you know, our culture is communal. So there's something we call the crab syndrome. Hardly can you find an African that is a millionaire in their 30s, very rare. You know, because every single African is attached to and have minimum 5 people, whether siblings or cousins, and they all rely on you. So once you're doing well, everybody needs something from you. Unfortunately, what we are doing is they give them a fish program, and it's not sustainable. What Africans need to start is teaching people how to fish, right? So when your cousin comes to you and say, you know what, can you give me $100 there? What you need to say is, you know what, I've gotten you this video that can teach you how to make $1,000 every month. So I've used that $100 to buy you a video that will teach you a business you can start. And I'm willing, if possible, to give you the initial capital. That is the kind of conversation we need to start making. Not the conversation of, oh, okay, send me your account number. You know, I'm going to send you. Because when we start doing that, then there's enough money to go around. Then your cousin in your village in Kampala, right, you know, or Togo, can then start his or her business, get empowered, employ 5 people, employ 20 people. And then the real issue of giving money will only be for our aged who need it for, you know, for good health care, for the younger ones who need it for schooling, you know. But what we do now is more of just handouts, and that needs to stop. So that's why Africans need to build wealth, because when we build wealth, a lot of lives are touched. A lot of other people are changed. People can then, because we're an extension. So instead of just giving you $100,
it multiplies, right?
It gets to multiply. And that's how we can chase away poverty. Oftentimes people tell me, there's corruption in your country. And I said, look, there used to be corruption in...
everywhere, huh?
Everywhere. When there was poverty everywhere too, right? So what, you know, reduced corruption in the Western world was systems that were put in place to make sure that even if you don't have immediate cash now, you can get a credit card. You can use that credit card to buy a car. You know, so you can get basic necessity, you know, of life. No matter who you are, I think some basic things, as long as you know you're willing to work hard and get a job. Now, Africa is not there yet, and the reason we're not there is because we don't have businesses, we don't have enough SMEs that are working well. Even some of the businesses are relying on government and relying on the corrupt system, you know, so we don't have real economy. And I think technology is a leveler, and it will go a long way in changing our lives. But again, the problem we then are having now is that there's no enough training. And when I say training, practical training, I'm not talking about, you know,
theoretical training
that we keep doing and conferences. I'm talking of workshops. I'm talking of practical training where you give me a tab, you teach me how to use it, you know. I'm able to get access to internet, and then you can show me this is how to set up your Shopify account, this is how to set up your eBay account, this is how to create your exportation account on Alibaba and start exporting your cashew nuts from Ogbomosho and somewhere in Lagos, in Nigeria, in Oyo State, you know. So you really have to go practical.
Yeah.
You really have to go practical.
Yeah.
We're not having that. So for me, wealth has to be created, because that's the only way we can end corruption. Mm. Okay, real wealth. You know, wealth where I'm being taught how to create fish, how to fish, instead of just being given a fish. Mm. So for me, that's why I'm investing in all this training, because I know that if I can empower you, by just empowering 20 people, I've indirectly empowered 200 people.
Exactly.
Because those 20 people have minimum 5 to 10 people that is in their community, in their network, that if they can influence such people, there you go.
Yeah, exactly. So you already mentioned, I mean, you kind of touch upon this, but in your view, what are the biggest challenges for Africa, and what are also the biggest opportunities? If you had to mention, no, not 5, 10, but like 3 main challenges and 3 main opportunities that we should all be watching for.
Well, the number one challenge, I think, is the challenge of incompetence. A lot of people want to put corruption first, but I think corruption is a product of competence.
Of incompetence?
Yes.
Okay.
So, and I'm going to give you a practical example.
Yes, please.
I happen to be a minister of commerce and industry, of my country, why will I steal anybody's money when I already, without government money, okay, I've created almost 20 subsidiaries and I've been able to build wealth without any government money. But what is the problem? Is that people who have never run business ever in their life, they don't know how to turn $2 to $4. Then you put them in the position that they need to do that. And now they don't know how to do that. And the resources are scarce, right? When you look at the infrastructural deficit in Africa, you need trillions of dollars, okay, to fix all that. So when you look at it, to fix my ministry, maybe I need $100 billion. And the only thing my country has is $500 million. That's all that we have. Do you see now?
Yeah.
Because I don't have the competence, okay, to turn $500 million to $100 billion. Of course, what do? I have to take care of my family. So I then have to steal. I said, okay, out of this 500 million, how do I steal 100 million? Do you see?
Yeah.
But if you put a competent person there, look at what Lim Kuan Yew did with Singapore. One of the things was to ask a lot of the entrepreneurs to join government, to say, let's build this. And many of them ran the economy like it was a business, because they had the exposure of running an enterprise. And so you then see the process of getting permission, getting government approvals and all that became almost like it was a business.
Yeah.
And so the economy changed. But what is the biggest problem of Africa is that we have people in power who are not competent. That's the biggest issue. They are not. Theoretically, they are, with all their masters and PhD. Okay, but in terms of practical terms, what have they done before? Okay, how have they turned a business around before? What have they done before? Aside the theories and policies, so you then see most African countries having all the laws in the world, but lack of implementation, because we don't have executors. There are people, you know, so we just do all this paperwork. So I think that's number one problem.
So incompetence, number one.
Yes, number one. Number two is the fear of technology by those in government. Again, you know. So if you, I know that in my country, I was shocked when I had a minister of communication that didn't have social media account. Minister of communication. So who is he communicating to? When, you know, over 60% of our population are young people. And the only way you can really communicate to them is via social media. But if you ask that minister, why doesn't he or she have a social media account? He will tell you that what do they do on social media? Than to abuse themselves and blackmail you. You know, I read all this nonsense all these young people are saying about me. You know, so there's that fear of technology, of, you know, and that's why many of them are trying to see how they could even regulate things. And sometimes you hear in some countries they are having to shut down the internet.
Yes.
Because they see it as the enemy. Meanwhile, I tell people, I said it took Mark Zuckerberg about 13 years to become the seventh richest man in the world. It took Aliko Dangote 30 years to become the 100th richest man in the world and the richest African. Can you compare? So one, leverage on technology, and in fact, did not spend 10% of what Elijah Aliko Dangote had to invest into building plants, you know, and all these factories, right? Just little amount to build a software, call it Facebook. And, you know, before you know it, seven richest man, and now he's even moved up the ladder. So, but he took somebody else without technology. You know, 30 years to even, to be like number 100.
Yeah.
Right, so what you can do. If we will change Africa, technology will be the tool. And so the problem is that our leaders, the policymakers, do not understand technology. They fear it. And until we begin to get people who understand technology, how it works, and how to put policies that can help young people leverage on technology to start their businesses and expand their businesses, we really wouldn't see much.
Yeah.
I think lastly is energy.
Energy.
Yeah, because many of us who run physical operations, having to spend a lot on diesel is crazy, right? If you have to spend 10% to 25% of the total amount of money you make to provide your own energy, doesn't make any sense.
What do you mean by energy? Just what kind of energy?
Electricity.
Oh, okay.
You know, just to power your
yeah.
You know, air condition, your laptops.
Yeah, you just need it for everything.
Yeah. So if Africa can fix electricity, be it green energy, renewable energy, you know, whatever we're going to use to just solve the power problem in Africa, I think it will just change everything for businesses. You know, I remember I needed my PA to send me something yesterday. So I was just like, I need it in the next 5 minutes. Like, so before you know it, she didn't reply me until like 20 minutes later. I was going, I needed 5 minutes. The journey's off. We needed to go buy fuel.
Oh my God.
You know.
You forgot because you were traveling.
I'd forgotten.
You adapted so quickly.
Yeah, you know, but I had to come back and say, oh, Jesus. You know, the reality just, yeah, you have to be patient here. You're on your own. But that's just the reality of what's going on here. How the speed the of, you know, problem being solved just because. So what you need to solve in 5 minutes taking 1 hour because of power problem. So if we can solve power, I think lack of power and poor electricity and having to be the one to generate your power is, I would call it number three, really.
Yeah.
You know, of course, other factors like corruption and all that. But for me, like I said earlier, I think the root cause of corruption is incompetence. You know, if you really get competent people, we're going to do away with corruption.
Yeah.
So opportunity is that the highest return on investment can only be gotten in Africa. It's only in Africa you can just become, you can do businesses where you make 50% return on investment, 100% return on investment, particularly in areas like real estate. You know, and of course, internet too. You know, issues of starting an online business. You know, e-commerce business. In no time, the kind of money you can be making, because you know, the darker an environment is, the brighter the light that.
Yes.
You know, so Africa is that kind of place where you can easily be a superstar and make a lot of money for yourself. So I still tell people, because a lot of people say to me, why not relocate? I say, I can't relocate. I still make bulk of my money from Africa. And that's, I mean, you'll be foolish, right, not to invest in Africa. It doesn't even make sense. Because when you understand the real reason for entrepreneurship is problem solving. You are an entrepreneur because you are ready to solve a problem. So that's what it's about. So the real proof that you're a good entrepreneur is, come on, let's go run business in Africa.
That's true. You this know. Is where people are going now. This is where all the businesses are.
Yeah.
There's a market.
Yeah, there. The market is there. We were talking about 700 million people in Africa. Nigeria alone is about 200 million. That's huge. You can't even get there, you know, get that United Kingdom. Like, that's almost like times five or so of the whole of the United Kingdom. Okay, are you? I mean, the market is and it's young. Oh, they are, Africa is the future. I mean, we're gonna kill it. Number two, like, is the population that we're talking about. So the market is there. So you can make a lot of money for yourself. And I think that everybody needs to begin to talk about Africa. And I think number three opportunity is technology. Young people are embracing technology like never before. We're changing things. We're coming up with software, with apps, with, no. If you're really serious about entrepreneurship, no matter, I don't care how rich you are, just begin to think of something you can begin to do in Africa. Begin to think of companies. You can, even if they are young today, trust me, they are the future. And how you can begin to expand your market to Africa. The challenges are there, yeah, but opportunities are far more than the challenges.
And there's something about Nigeria,
yeah,
right? Nigeria seems to be exporting itself to the world. You know, it's one of the biggest economies in Africa. You know, they export, you know, music, businessmen. What is it in Nigeria that is not in the rest of Africa?
It is the hunger. We are hungry.
Where does it come from, though? Where does that hunger come from?
I think the hunger is from our challenges, right? We face a lot. We face a lot. Somebody said we're the happiest people in the world. You know, we've seen a lot. We've battled with a lot, yet we're standing. You know, so when you look at how we're wired, right, where we've had to withstand everything and still we're standing. Isn't it amazing that the richest man in Africa is from Nigeria instead of being from South Africa, where the energy is better, where the broadband is better, where the policies are better? You know, so it tells you of our tenacity, of our hunger. So because we have to fight so many things, right?
Yeah.
So because you have to fight so many
resilience,
things.
A lot of resilience.
So that naturally resilience in you. And so you that's why you see, if you look at the universities in UK and in the US, Nigerians are doing well than anybody else because they have been cooked up, right? You know, facing. So when they come to this part of the world, it's like, oh, it's easy. Oh, this is, you know, like, let's go, let's kill it, let's crush them. Because we've had to battle a lot. And so I think it's the hunger. We're hungry people. We are hungry, right? You won't believe it. The second time I came to London, I registered two companies. That's the kind of
you
hunger.
You don't lose any time.
Yeah.
That's time the, is money.
That's
isn't
the
it?
Kind of hunger we have. Like, oh, let's take London.
That's amazing. So let's go back to your personal story and your businesses and the work you do, you know, the public speaking, the training people. What are the biggest challenges you face in doing what you do? You know, during the training, during the workshop that I attended, you spoke about how difficult it is to change the mindset of those people that are poor or they're trying to create wealth.
Yeah.
Can you expand a bit on that? What do you mean by that? And all the challenges that you face in your current job or career role, etc.
Well, my number one problem is that the market I decided to pick were people who are in the lower class, who are trying to come up. What battered that was also my own background. being that that was where I was coming from. So I had that hunger that if I succeed, I want to help as many people, I want to inspire as many people. But it's difficult doing that because there's that mental issue where many of the people who are having low income still believe that the reason why they are poor is because they don't have enough masters or enough PhD. And even when they get that again, they are thinking that, oh, the problem is that, okay, maybe nursing doesn't work anymore. Oh, they said now it's cybersecurity. So let me go, you know, so we are not aware that the industrial era is over. And that your wealth is no longer about the degrees you are acquiring, but about the quality of information that you have at your disposal, many of whom you have to get informally. Your Google no longer require that you have a BSc to work with them. Facebook no longer require that. IBM no longer require that. Africans are not still thinking that. Why are these people saying they don't need that?
That's interesting because you also mentioned how hard it is still for people to invest in doing courses outside of formal means of education.
Yeah,
right?
Because you see an African, we spend $40,000 for another master's degree.
That does not guarantee you a job.
That does not guarantee a job either. But to spend $1,000 for an informal training on how you can start your YouTube channel and start making money. What's YouTube? What are they saying? What do they want to teach? Forget that. So we're comfortable, you know, being broke at our job for 40 years, but we cannot invest 4 years in growing our own business or 4 hours in going to learn on how to start our own business. It's ironic, and I think it's the mental issue where we're still stuck in that thinking that no, I don't need this informal training. All these guys who are trying to teach me informal way of making money, you know, are just scammers, and you know, I can just get another degree. So until that change, we're not going to see many of them moving into realizing that all your employers are dropout. Richard Branson has never seen the foreword of any university. He owns Virgin, trained Virgin Atlantic. Come on. Mark Zuckerberg is a dropout. Bill Gates is a dropout. Right? So the reason I tell people that, isn't it funny that you didn't think that your professor, because listen, the reason why you should want a degree, for me, is enlightenment. Not because you want to be rich, because that era is gone. It's just like, hey, I'm curious. I want to just get knowledge in that. But if your problem is you want more money, then a formal education is no longer that. Because if that is true, then your professors will have been the richest people in the world. How come the richest people in the world are dropouts, are people who never even went to university? So if indeed money is what you're looking for, look for a rich man around you. Be an apprentice under that person, and you learn how to be rich. That's what I learned at the age of 17 from Robert Kiyosaki, and that's what got me here. That creating wealth is usually through informal apprenticeship. Meeting people who are successful, you know, reading their books, going for their seminars. If you're able to have a one-on-one relationship with them, work as an apprentice with them for a while, and see how they're doing it. That is how to build wealth, okay? The university part is because you want to be a scholar, you want to, you know, that should be the reason, not because you want to make money.
Are there any other challenges that you think are quite important or quite significant in your job, or would you say that that's
there's
the main?
There's several. I think there's still several, and there's still issues of, you know, I'm looking for a word because you can't call it racism, right? So the fact that I'm black, you know, naturally casts a shadow. So let me give you an example. So sometimes say, I want to teach you how to make X amount. And I want to teach you how you can make $10,000 from e-commerce every month. And then you see somebody type, you know, so you that want to teach me that, how much have you made? And so I asked myself, how foolish is that? Because all that person needed to do was to Google my name before asking that question. Just say, okay, for this guy to even be saying he wants to teach me how to make $10,000, let me Google him and figure out who he is. Because if you Google me, then you see that my current project is raising $10 billion to do 100,000 units. That definitely tells you that's not somebody even at the level of $10,000. And that he must have been doing this just because he probably is part of his own, you know, social enterprise and CSR and trying to do something. But because we don't even try to even Google, you know, but naturally because the person is black, you're already thinking that, Meanwhile, if you were a white person and say, I'm going to teach you how to make $10,000 from e-commerce, you don't even question. Just, you know, all these white guys, you know, just I don't have the money. So you're not even thinking, how much has he made? Who is he? So the fact that your own people look down on you just because, you know, there's that, you know, fear. You know, Africans are afraid of themselves, and it's a slavery mentality. Africans look down on themselves. It's a slavery mentality. We need to stop that. Okay? And when I say themselves, including, we do so bad to ourselves. You see sometimes how some people talk down on themselves, not somebody else. So you, and that's why sometimes I'm not sad, because I could see how you are rating yourself. So you can't rate me better, because you can't love your neighbor more than yourself. Even the holy book says, love your neighbor as yourself. So if you are looking down on yourself, you definitely will look down on me, not even because you are wicked, but that's just how you see life. So until we begin to look up to ourselves and hold ourselves at high esteem, we're not going to get better. And I try to do that anywhere I go, right? I try to talk to people. You know, a lot of times when I'm dealing with people, I know they're already looking at me. Even some of them were not Africans. One of those guys. And I say, no, I'm different. You know, the first time I got to America, at the point of entry, I remember being, you know, delayed. My passport was put in a yellow bag, and I was asked to wait somewhere. So I had to call my visa consultant, and then he told me that if they put it, the next thing was they're going to put it in a red bag. And if they put it in a red bag, I'm going to just land in Nigeria. You know, it was just funny, guy. I said, are you kidding me? He said, I'm not kidding you. From yellow is red, and red means deportation.
Oh my God.
Now, I wasn't worried about the deportation because I wasn't planning to come live in America. It was a World Bank training for just a week. So, but I was worried about the amount of money I paid for the ticket. It was over $3,000 that time, you know. So it was a lot of money to just lose. And so I walked up to the immigration guy and said, what's going on here? So the guy looked at me and said, can't I, you know, delay you? I said, you can, but I've been to other countries. I've not been treated this way. He said, what country have you been to? I said, well, I've been to Ghana, I've been to Dubai, I've been to, you know, United Kingdom. He said, well, because you Nigerians, you say half truth and half lie. Yeah, he said that to me. And I remember looking at him, furious. I said, I'm not an ordinary Nigerian. Google my name. He said, hey, no, anybody who can find your social media handle, we're not talking about social media here. I said, I'm also not talking about social media. I'm talking about media interviews, books I've written. I've written 33 books, you know, as at that time, 4 books. So he said, books? I said, yeah. He said, it's on your Amazon. Google my name. And he went, you know. They are not like immigration guys in Africa. They don't have internet and a laptop to confirm. So he went, and went on Amazon. He said, you wrote Survival Instinct. I said, yeah. He said, you wrote Mobile Millionaire. I said, yeah. He said, obviously, you're one of the most important people from Nigeria. Welcome to America.
Crazy.
Yeah. So I've had to be an ambassador and always having to defend, you know, my country and say, look, yeah, I know many people come here as scammers and are doing all manner of stuff, but I'm different. And you can't just have that stereotype that every African is a thief.
The same as not every European is, not every American is.
Exactly.
Right?
However, I think we need to start with ourselves, looking up to ourselves. When there are more people like me, okay, who challenge the stereotype and say, no, I'm not one of them. I'm different. If I tell you something, you know, you saw what even happened here today. So the manager here, this is a club, it's a private club. And he told me that he had a lot of my students from the training coming in here, and he could only have me bring in 3 people. Maybe I can move to the other restaurant that is general. And I said to him, okay, I'm going to tell my guest, and just give me some time. So after 1 minute or so, he called me again. I can't get you a table. I can only do 3 people. I said, I got you. After another 1 minute, he came back and said, I said, look, I am from Africa. We respect people. I can't just tell my guests, leave.
Just like that.
I've told them that, you know, so I'm just trying. Everybody just needed to get my contacts and all that. And this is, so in less than 5 minutes, everybody was gone except you. So I walked up to him. You saw me when I said, yeah. I told you. Now you can see, you even asked me to get 3 people, now I'm only with 1 person. So, but that's how we have to stand up for ourselves and say, look, if I tell you I'm going to do something,
stick to it.
Because obviously he had assumed one of those Africans is going to tell you, we do, you know, and then they're just going to make and start shouting here now, and this is private, you know. So, you just have to keep standing up for yourself, and over time you begin to change the stereotype.
Yeah. So, what are you most proud of?
The fact that I've authored 33 books.
That's very impressive, I have to say.
Yeah.
And how old are you?
I'm 33, incidentally.
Exactly. I'm like, I have to catch up.
You know, I plan to do maybe 10 this year.
Wow.
Yeah, so I think that's one of those things. And I'm also proud of the impact, you know, because, you know, there's a time in your life where success is not just about how much you're making, but how much other people are able to make because of what they've learned from you. That is a major thing that is giving me a lot of joy.
And then if you had to share 3 top tips of advice to a young person who wants to become an entrepreneur, an African young person, in the UK or in Nigeria or anywhere else in Africa.
Get a mentor, number one.
Number one, get a mentor.
Get somebody who is successful in the area you want to go into. Pay them or serve them.
Or what? Pay them or?
Serve them. So you either pay for them to mentor you, or you go work with them. Hopefully they pick you up. And then, of course, you don't expect them to pay you if you want to work for them, because they're trying to teach you. And so in many cases, you can't expect them to teach you and be paying you. It's just not fair. So do, you know, just get a mentor, number one. Number two, have what we call quest quotient. So understand that knowledge, in the school of success, knowledge is not a destination but a journey. So, you know, keep learning every day, because the enemy of your success tomorrow is your current knowledge. And we're in the information age where in seconds what you know is obsolete. So you have to have that quest quotient, hungry to learn more, hungry to check what are the new trends, what are the new strategies, what are the new ways of doing things and getting things done and all that. So that has to be the culture that you have to imbibe if you really want to build, you know, lasting wealth in this part of the world or any part of the world. And I think number three will be embrace technology. Okay, embrace technology, right? Mobile apps, social media, you know, just embrace it as much as you can. No matter what you're doing, just embrace technology. Understand that technology is a leveler and is a catalyst and an accelerator. That what takes people 20 years, with technology you can do it in 7 years.
Yeah. And then lastly, I'd like you to complete this sentence. The Africa I want is...
You know why I'm doing the home? Because...
Beyond Nigeria.
Eh?
Beyond Nigeria has to be the...
Yeah,
Africa.
And it's because the Africa I want is many things, right? You know, but the Africa I want is the Africa where everybody is successful by their definition of success. Everybody is comfortable. People can pay their bills. I think the definition of the Africa I want is Singapore, where one out of every five Singaporean is a millionaire. That's the kind of Africa I want.
That's good because it's tangible. You're putting numbers into it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like an that. Africa where one out of every five Africans is a millionaire.
And not the opposite.
No, not the opposite. And when that happens, there'll be less crime, less corruption. You can make the money legally, so why steal anybody's money?
Exactly.
Yeah, so.
Wow, thank you so much.
You're
welcome.
That
was amazing.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate this.
Yes. Interview.